All right, we are holding on Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph, the third line of the wide line. So we discussed yesterday, we had a case of, we had two cases of Pikadon in our Mishnah, where one of them we said that a person says, your father, one of your fathers deposited with me a mana, I don't know which one of you, we say that he has to pay each one individually. He has to pay each one a mana. Versus, we said, if you had two people who were one was masked by him 100, the other one 200, we say he only has to give him each 100, and the other 100 we leave aside at Shiyav Eliyah.
Why we say even on other ones?
So that was the Gemara asked that yesterday, and we said the answer was that in the first case, it was his carelessness.
Oh.
What do you mean? Only one person deposited by you. You should have kept track of who deposited what. In the second case, it's not just that two people deposited. I mean, you could expect him to write their names or something on them, but because they did it at the same time in the presence of each other, he has the ability to say, you know what, you guys obviously didn't mind each other knowing how much you deposited, therefore you can't expect me, I figured you guys trust each other. I didn't think it was necessary to write it down yet. Okay, so that's where we're holding now, the third line of the wide line. Rami Gezel Agezel. So now the Gemara points out, okay, we have another contradiction between two cases that involve Gezel. One is Katani Hacha. We have in our mission, Amla Shlaim Gazalti Lacha Mekem Mana. If a person says to two people, I stole a mana from one of you, Vaini Adei Ezem Ekem, and I don't remember which one of you, and I don't know which one of you it was, Oy Ovir Shalachad Mekem Hifkidli Mana, or one of your fathers gave me a Pekadu in a mana, Vaini Adei Ezehu, and I don't know which one, Noisim Lazem Mana Lazem Mana. We say he has to pay each one of them, so therefore he ends up, he thought he only owes a mana, and in the end he's going to be paying out two mana. Or a mini. But I have a contradiction, because we learned in the Mishnah in Yevamos tells us, the context is over there, it talks about a case where a person was Makadish, one of five women, and he's not sure which one it was. So therefore, by the same logic, then the Mishnah digresses over there to talk about a similar case, where he has to give a get to each one, and Chalitza maybe involved, whatever, yeah. So the Mishnah says, Gozel Echad Mechamisha, if a person stole from one out of five people, the Eni Adei is a man Gozel, he doesn't know which one he stole from. Each one claims it was me. In that case, we don't make him pay out all five of them. Maniach Gzela by name, Mustalik, Divir Reb Tarfon. Reb Tarfon says that he puts down the Gzela between them. Now, we're going to talk about on Amud Beis, what does that mean? Does it mean that he's the first one who grabs it, or what does it mean exactly? We'll get to that soon. But he puts down the Gzela between them, Mustalik, and then he leaves. That's it. He's accomplished what he needed to. He got it out of his hands. Divir Reb Tarfon, that's what Reb Tarfon says. Alma, so you see from that, Misfeta Lema Pkinim Ramayna. We don't take away from him five mana because of the suffix, five times. Vayimrinin, and in fact we say Ukim Ramayna Vachazkas Mare. You put the money in the chazaka of its owner. He himself, therefore, fine, you know, he stole from one of them, but you don't know which one. Therefore, we put it, as the Gemara is going to say in Amud Beis, we put it in escrow until we can figure out who it was. But we don't make them pay out separately to each one, like our Mishnah said. What's the difference? Okay, so before we get to the answer, the Gemara has to ask. Fine, but we said over there, Divrei Reb Tarfon. There's not just Reb Tarfon to consider over there. There's Reb Akiva's opinion over there. Reb Akiva says you actually have to pay each one. So the question is, and we might demasnis and zahach Reb Tarfon. Okay, fine. Who says there's a problem? Maybe our Mishnah goes according to Reb Akiva. That one goes according to Reb Tarfon. Fine. The answer is no. The Katania Jimmer of Akiva, it says on the side, maybe our Mishnah goes according to Reb Akiva, and then there's no Stira. The answer is no. The Katania law, because we have a Braisa that expands on that Mishnah, the Katania law Dahi, there's a Braisa that expands on that Mishnah and explains, Moedir Reb Tarfon, Ba'omil Shnaim Gazalti Lechad Mekem Mona, Reb Tarfon would agree in a case where the person himself voluntarily comes and says to two people, I stole from one of you a mana, but any day Azim Kem, I don't know which one of you it was, Shanoisan Lazemana Vlazemana, that you pay a mana to each one. So in that case, really what you have is it's not so much therefore, so it comes out therefore, it's not really a contradiction from the Mishnah and Yevamos to our Mishnah. The Tosfos pointed out, the Gemara could have just as well asked the contradiction between between the Mishnah there and Yevamos and the Braisa on it, where you have one case where we're saying he just maniach zeila b'nehem, and the other one where we're saying he has to pay out individually. It didn't have to bring in our Mishnah at all. Tosfos says, okay, the Gemara would rather, if it has to bring a stira, it would rather bring a stira between one Mishnah and another, because we know the Mishnayas are accurate. The Braisas, you could always for Enfro and say it's not an accurate price or whatever. But
why do we penalize them for borrowing?
That's the question. That's what we have to figure out. So why is it we have a case where we make them pay individually to each one versus we have a case where he just maniach zela b'neihem, he just takes out the amount that he stole, he puts it on the table or whatever, as we'll talk about on Amud Beis, what he does with it exactly, and that's it. He's proper. What's the difference? And the point is, anyway, we say Reb Tarfon is moider. Therefore, we have to say our Mishnah, which gives the identical case, must be according to Reb Tarfon as well. So, yeah, the question is in Reb Tarfon's opinion itself. Okay. The answer is Hossam the Kotavile. That's the difference. Over there, you have those five people, or however many people it is, are coming and suing him. So he's not volunteering. He only wants to pay what he's mechuyev mitzad adin. Well, mitzad adin, you can't make him pay each one individually. He only stole from one of them, not from all. He didn't steal from all five. Mitzad adin, you can only obligate him to pay out one time. Therefore, maniach zeh lebeneihem. Hacha, over here, our Mishnah, as well as the Braisa over there in Yevamos, is talking about the balotis yidei shamayim. It's talking about where he himself comes to us, Rashi says, he comes to us, the Rav, the Dayanim, to ask, what should I do to not be punished by the Eidishter? So then we tell them, you know what, if you're already talking to Deshamayim, then you're going to have to pay out each one individually, because you yourself don't know.
Why do we say that over there?
Because over there, he's not coming up to Deshamayim. Right. Over there, the people are suing him. He's saying, I don't think I should have to pay any of you. All of you are coming to me with a
sum. Yes,
no, but because he's not coming. Mitzad Adin, he's only chayav one money. We don't know who that money goes to, so we're going to have to put it in escrow. But if he wants lots of Yidei Shemayim, if he wants to avoid being punished by the Eibishter, yes, he's going to have to give. He's going to have to give to all of them.
And here,
so that's what we're saying. That's our mission. It's talking about Omer L'Shnayim. He comes voluntarily over to two people, says, "I stole from one of you. I want to be Yotzi Yidei Shemayim." So, in other words, when our mission says doesn't mean like we originally said in the Gemara yesterday that we cancel him, that we make him a knas because he was a gazlan, and therefore we take away from him more than he originally stole. No, because here it's lost his Yedeshamayim. He himself wants to be Yotze. So that's what we talked about yesterday, that even within that, if we have, for example, a case where for example, if it wasn't that your father is deposited by me and Mana and I was careless and I didn't remember which one, but rather one of you and I was careless and forgot which one, then we won't even make him pay Lotus Yidei Shemayim, because then we can say, okay, you guys yourselves have to know which one of you it was. Yeah.
In the case of,
and then, yeah, the same thing in the case of the third Mana. Yeah.
In the case of the Kefil, he volunteers and he gets the kefil back.
When he volunteers, he doesn't get the kefil back. It's just he doesn't pay it in the first place because
well,
the motive of knas pot.
Well,
okay.
Yeah. Well, you two guys, you can't say you guys swear that one of you swear that was me that had 200.
We talked about that yesterday. No, because what happens if both of them are going to say they want to swear? You now you can't make the guy have to pay out 400 when, again, as we said in the Gemara yesterday, he wasn't careless. He figured he has reason. He figures they trust each other. We shouldn't make him pay out a 400 when which wasn't given to him. Yeah. Tosfos discusses over here at some length how exactly then we could have that our Mishnah could end up going according to Rabbi Akiva or according to Rabbi Tarfon. Each one of it, the Stam Mishnah after all, each one of them can explain our Mishnah in accordance with their Shitta. Because Rabbi Akiva says it's not just B'vola Tzidei Shemayim. Rabbi Akiva says it's actually Mitzad Adin you have to. So he would understand our Mishnah in that way. Whereas Reb Tarfon would say that in a case like this, it's only lots of Tzidei Shemayim. Because that's what the Mishnah says over there. That in the Gozel HaBechamish case, Reb Tarfon says he only has to put it between them, and Reb Akiva says Lo Yizu Aderach Moisiyatu. So wait, we'll get to that. Yeah. Fine. Dekanami. In fact, the Gemara says, yeah, you can see from the wording of the Mishnah that it must be a case of Lotzi Yidei Shemayim. We're not talking about what he's obligated Mitzad based in, but what he's obligated in a moral sense if he wants to get. How do we see that from the Mishnah? Because the Mishnah says, why are we making him pay out to both of them? Because he himself was Moida. So you're asking why do we put it more on him if he's Moida? Precisely that. Because if he's Moida, it shows he's trying to do things in the best possible way to be Yotze, being punished by the Eibishter. Therefore, we will tell him. So therefore, we will tell him in that case, then you have to make sure somehow or other that the one you stole from is going to get his money. It's sort of Lufnir Mishra. It's sort of Lufnir Mishra.
So by
Rabbi
Akiva would not be. It would be the Adin,
He would have to pay both of them?
Well, no. So in the end, the Gemara is going to say, on Amud Beis, that even if one's Jacob Kibbeh, it's also the ball up to Tudei Shemayim. So Tosfos discusses over here that the difference between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Kaufman may turn more on the matter of, so his claim is a Shema. I'm not sure which one of you I stole from or whatever. What are their claims? Are their claims Bari, you definitely stole from me or whatever? Or is it also Shema? I was stolen from and I have reason to suspect it was you or whatever. Yeah. Anyway. Shemayim, okay, so that proves that our Mishnah is just talking about Lotus Yidei Shemayim and is not talking about his actual technical Chiyuv and Beis Din.
It's not a very strong proof because you say, Hoidim Ipni Atzmo, that it's Yidei Shemayim. It's not.
But that's what it means. If Hoidim Ipni Atzmo, that means, in other words, they're not coming and claiming it from him necessarily. He himself is voluntarily coming and saying, I stole from one of you. Okay, well, that would be Lotus Yidei Shemayim, because what else would it be then? In that case, if neither of them is coming.
Conscience.
If neither of. Right, but that's exactly what Lotus Yidei Shemayim is, that he has a conscience and he wants.
He would never have to pay anything.
Yeah, if they're not coming to him with a taina at all, or maybe they're only coming with a taina shema, maybe you stole from me, no Beis Din would take the case. They'd tell them, bring some kind of proof if you want to collect from this guy, you know. Yeah. Okay. So now, Omamar, Hossam de Kotabile, fine. So let's go back to what we said. We said that the case in Yuvamus, the Gazal Achad Mechamisha, is where they are, all five of them are coming and suing him in Beis Din. They're all coming and claiming, you stole from us, each one is saying, you stole from me, and you're obligated to pay me. The question is, v'halom matoyim. Fine. What is this Gazlan counterclaiming? What's his reaction when each of them comes with this argument to him?
No.
Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, halosh shoytik. So Rav Yehuda says that in the name of Rav, that his reaction, in order to be mechayev him, is that his reaction is that he's quiet. He doesn't contradict any of them. He doesn't. The Reuven comes, Shimon comes, etc. He doesn't contradict any of them to say, no, it's not you. Rav Masna, Amar Rav Alot Seveach. Whereas Rav Masna says in the name of Rav that no, he's yelling out. Each one says, you stole from me. The Gazlan says, no, it's not you. I don't recognize you. Because he would say Abel Shtika Kaida, because Rav Masna would understand it that if he's quiet when all five of them claim it, then it's Shtika Kaida. It would mean then he's effectively admitting when Reuven comes and says you stole from me, and he says nothing. It would mean fine. It means implicitly I owe Reuven. Same thing with Shimon. Same thing with Levi, etc. Then he would have to pay out five times. The only way you can only make him pay out one time, Rav Masna would say, is if Seveach. If each one he's yelling, he's counterclaiming, it's not you. Then, okay, the fact is he stole from one of them, so therefore we have to get the Gzela out of him somehow, therefore Maniach Benehim Mestalik.
On the other hand, you know, you could say that, someone just comes and you owe me money, you stole money from me.
Uman de Omer Halosh Shoytik, whereas according to Rav Yehuda's understanding, when we say that even if he's quiet, even if he doesn't contradict them, we still only make him pay out once, because Shtika Kach Halav Kaidahu, because this kind of Shtika is not the equivalent of a Haidah. Mati Omale, because he's able to say afterwards, I don't actually owe you. The reason why I was quiet when each one individually came to me, and by the way, Mephoshim say, we're not necessarily talking about that all five of them are surrounding him at Beis Din, and then each making their claims and he's quiet. Then for sure he could say, you know, I wanted to say it in private or whatever. We're talking about even each one individually brings in Beis Din, and each one he denies it wasn't you. Even then you could, not denies, even if he's choice it, he doesn't say anything. You could still argue, Rav Yehuda says, that it's not Kaidah, Mati Amalei, because he's able to say, Hai Dishtiki L'Chochad B'Chad, the reason I was quiet when each one individually came and claimed it, Damina, because I thought to myself, okay, maybe Taka, Dilma Hayu, maybe it is him, I'm Taka, not sure. I wasn't Seveach, but it doesn't mean that I implicitly admitted that it definitely is him.
Wait a minute. We had other cases of Shtika, and in all the other cases, it's Shtika.
Usually, Shtika Kaidah. But there are cases.
Because we're saying
he himself.
Because
he knows he stole it.
Well, whatever
the reason. He knows he stole from only one person. He knows four out of these five
liars.
People. Well, either outright liars, or maybe they were from somebody that says they were stolen from somebody else, and they're attributing it to him.
Other cases.
Usually you don't. Usually, if for example, if Reuven says to Shimon, "You owe me money," and Shimon doesn't say anything,
then
fine. Because in this case, all five of these. Because it's not all. Five of these claims cannot possibly be true, and that's the thing. Therefore, the argument, because the fact is, he didn't steal from all five of them. He didn't. He only stole from one of them.
He could have stolen for five of them or for none of them, for that purpose.
He himself is saying that he himself. He's not denying. I never stole.
Anything. He's quiet.
quiet doesn't mean he doesn't say a word. Quiet means when Reuven says, you stole from me, he doesn't counterclaim, no, I stole from somebody else, but it wasn't you. He's quiet. But he admits, yes, I stole from one person.
No, he's quiet. He doesn't admit.
Quiet means that he's quiet as far
as
not. The word quiet over here does not mean that he comes and zips his lips. It means that he doesn't say anything counterclaiming against Reuven or against Shimon or against Levi or what have you. But the general fact that he says, yes, I stole from one person, that's what
who says he says yes?
That's what it has to mean. That's what it means. He says, yes, I stole, but I don't know from which one of the five of you it was, and therefore, when each of you is claiming for me,
no question.
That's what do you mean there's no question? According to Rav Masna, there is a question. According to Rav Masna, if he says, yes, I stole from one of you, I don't know which one, however, I'm not going to contradict each one of you, Rav Masna would say, then he's chayav to pay all five of them. He doesn't know. That's what it means. He says, I stole. They bring him to Beis Din. He says, it's true, I stole. But now Reuven comes and says, it was me. And he says, I don't know whether it was you. That's what it means. Shtika means he doesn't answer back. He doesn't say it was you. He doesn't say it wasn't.
He says, I don't know. It's not shtika.
He says, I don't know. Reuven says it was me. He doesn't say anything. Shimon says it was me. He doesn't say anything, et cetera. That's what we mean by shtika. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So then, therefore, sort of Masna would say, in that case, you can't make him pay. Rather, Rabbi Yehuda would say, in that case, you can't make him pay all five. Certainly, Rabbi Yehuda would say, for sure you can't make him pay all five of them. He himself is saying, it wasn't you, et cetera. But even if Shosik, this is not the kind of shtika kodo.
Because there's five people.
Because there's five people, and he didn't answer anything to any one of them, because he himself doesn't know. He knows he stole from somebody. He doesn't know which of the five it was. Therefore, it's good enough for him to be maniach zeilabene.
So it's part of a hoidah. It's not the full hoidah.
He is moida that he stole, but he's not moida to any one of them. He's not moida, but he's not contradicting them either.
So my question comes back. How come we accept that as a partial hoidah here?
Because we're saying, fine, we know he owes something. We don't know who he owes it to. And therefore, we can't make him pay for all five of them. So we say you put down the gzela between them and then you leave. What does that mean? You put it down between them and they're going to end up dividing it or whatever. What does it mean then? All of them are going to take it and they're going to go. Didn't Rav Abba bar Zavda tell us in the name of Rav, which we learned in the previous Perek, kol sofik hinuach, any case where something we're not sure whether it was put down deliberately or not. We have the case in the previous Perek, for example, you found tied up baby birds next to it behind a fence. Maybe somebody put it there deliberately, maybe not.
Right.
So you should not take it because it doesn't have a simon, because assume the guy is going to come back for it. The imnata, but if you took it, lo yachzir, then you shouldn't return it, because you shouldn't return it if somebody is coming and claiming it, because you don't know whether it's his or not, so there's no simon for him to validly claim it. We said, now, Tosfos argued, in other words, the logic is, Rashi says, the same principle over here then would be that if you have something that there's a suffix, what are you saying? Imnata lo yachzir. We're saying that if you take it, shouldn't you return it? So what are you putting it down on the table over here? And somebody else, one of them, may walk off with it when it's not his.
There you go.
According to Tosfos, rather, the question Tosfos in the previous perek.
Yeah.
According to Tosfos in the previous perek, when we had this concept suffik hinuach, Tosfos explained it somewhat differently. That it meant that lo yito, you shouldn't take it because then the owner may come back looking for it and not find it and then be miyayish on it. The imnata, but if you took it, lo yach, and you find the owner, and then you shouldn't return it because then the owner may never come back for it. So over here it would be a similar kind of thing. In other words, if you took it, you shouldn't be putting it down in a way where none of them is who is going to be validly taking it at this point. So what does that mean? You put it down between them. Rav Safra says, you're right. It doesn't mean you put it down on the table in front of them. V'yaniach means you put it, you leave it, you keep it in your hands until you keep it in escrow for them, basically, until it gets proven. Mistalik doesn't mean then that you leave. It means that then you're potter from any further part of the din. At that point, the din is between the five of them. They have to work it out between themselves and have Beis Din or whatever figure out who of the five is telling the truth, and then he'll give it to them. By the way, in general, when we say all this time that we've been saying Yehi Munachat Shiyav Eliyo, there is a machlokas Rishonim, whether it means that the person himself keeps it, the Shomer or the Gazlan, as the case may be, or does that mean we put it in Beis Din?
Yeah.
So some of the Rishonim actually distinguish between, in the case of the Gazlan, maybe in Beis Din, in the case of the Shomer, he keeps it. The Chacham Sofer has an interesting chat over here. He says what you do is, okay, you're a Gazlan, you're not acting on behalf of the Balabas, so you can't say you keep it in your possession until we find the real Balabas. Rather, what it is you put it on the table. At that point, you've accomplished the mitzvah of a Heshem HaSegzela in the sense the actual Migzol is somewhere there, and if we knew who it was, he would take it right there on the spot. Because we don't know, you will now take it back and become a Shomer on it. And as a Shomer, therefore, you will be doing it as a Shomer on behalf of the real owner once we figure out who he is.
As long as it goes to the Bezin.
He's going to keep it. According to, that's the thing, because Rashi uses the expression that he keeps it. You keep it in his hands. So that's the Chacham Sofer explains. Why would you keep it in his hands if he was a Gazlan?
Right.
Because he's taking it back as a Shomer. But again, you have to get
a Shomer once he was a Gazlan.
Why not?
Why not? He's a Gazlan on an item, and now you're making him.
And now he's returning it. And now we're,
now
we're making him a Shomer, yeah. But that's one way of looking at it.
When it's in front of the five people?
In front of the five people, yeah. So he puts it down on the table, saying, okay, now I've accomplished the Heshev HaSegzela. If one of you, if we can figure out which one of you it is, and you'll take it, and I'm completely potter, because we can't, because all five of you are claiming it, therefore I'll take it back as a Shomer, and then continue. Again, there are other Rishonim who learn that, no, what it means is you put it in basin. Okay.
According to Rashi, he comes up pretty well.
Well, it doesn't mean he can spend it or anything, it just means he's a, yeah. It doesn't mean, yeah. Okay. Fine. And he keeps it at Yob Elio. Interesting thing, by the way, before we continue.
Would he accept it for sure at this point in time? If he's murdered, he took out one.
You can't make him, so who's making him?
No, I know there's
okay.
No sure.
Okay.
But would he be accepted if there was a theoretical...
We learned in the first paragraph, just because a person is choshed on Mama and is not necessarily choshed...
He's murdered.
Fine, okay, then maybe yes, because he's a Gazlan, yeah, a Gazlan. Yeah.
Okay,
so you can't make him a Shubha. What? If he's done a Shubha, and we see that, yeah. Okay.
If he's a Gazlan, if he's
postulated, probably.
If he's a Gazlan, yeah, the same rules would apply until we know that he's done full Shubha from it, yeah. Each of the Psalah Aegis, there's rules how we know when they...
That goes to my question.
Okay.
So how can you be a Shomer?
What does one have to do with the other? A person can be a Shomer.
Possibly.
Doesn't mean that he can't be a Shomer. There's different rules for them. Okay.
Now you have five witnesses that he's a Shomer also.
Fine, okay, yeah. Okay, onward. I'll mention an interesting thing, by the way. The Baal HaTurim says under the Pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim that says it talks about the case of a Shomer where the thing was stolen and we have to have a Shavua in order to find out what the story is. The Pasuk uses an expression over there. What's the expression? Asher Yashirun Alekim Yishalom Shnayim. There's one of the phrases over there. I'm trying to remember now which one it is. There's five words in the pasuk over there where the Rosh HaTevis of them spell out in order the word Eliyahu, which is a hint for what we're saying over here, that when we don't know who the Gazlan is, and yeah, that's what it is. V'nikra balabais El HaLikim Im Lo Shalach Yodeh. Yeah. Im Lo Shalach Yodeh.
I just thought of something. If he takes it back, it will make all the five people work really hard to figure out.
That may well be.
They're going to be so aggravated to see who gets it back. So we're like, okay, it wasn't mine.
Yeah.
You know, we got to get it right away.
All right, let's move on. Okay. I'm going to buy a little bit. Me Amar Rabbi Akiva. Now, what about, fine, so far we've dealt with Rabbi Taufin's opinion. Now, what about Rabbi Akiva's opinion? Does he really say, again, in that Mishnah in Yevamos, Lo Yizu Aderach Maisi Atami De Avera, that's not the proper way to get him out of the Avera, Ad Shei Shalom Gzeira Lo Kol Chabachad, he's going to have to pay the Gzeira to each one individually, Alma, which shows Mispeikam Apkinim Amoina. Evidently, according to Rabbi Akiva, just because of a suffix, we will take Mammon out of him. We will make him pay all five of them. We won't say that he has a chazaka on 400 of that and shouldn't have to pay. According to Rabbi Akiva, that's what it seems. Urimini, however, I have a contradiction. We have another place where Rabbi Akiva seems to say differently. The Mishnah in Baba Basra tells us, the Mishnah in Baba Basra in the ninth parak talking about the dinim of Yerusha, it talks about a variety of cases where you have two people, where one is going to be yashining the other, we're both died, and we don't know which one died first. The classic case is that a house collapsed on them, and we don't know which one died first.
Right.
Which makes differences. That's right. Yeah. Which makes differences as far as the dinim of Yerusha. So yeah. So nafal abayis all of ba'al imoy. So one of the cases is suppose the house collapses on him and his mother. Whichever now, if his mother died first, then he will inherit from her, and then after, so her family is not going to get the nechassim. His family will. If he died first, then he never inherited from her, and then the Nechassim revert to her family. Yeah. So, Yosheb ben Omim Ha'im Meisir Shaina, so the heirs of the son claim the mother died first, therefore the son yarshin her, and then we yarshin it from him. The Yosheb Omim Ha'ben Mesrishin, where the yarshim of the mother say that the son died first, therefore he never yarshin from her, therefore the Nechassim stayed in her possession till she died, and now we, her brothers or her father or whatever, yarshin it from her. Both Beth Shammah and Beth Hillel, in the various other cases in that parak, Beth Shammah and Beth Hillel argue what you do with the Nechassim. There's cases over there, for example, a father and a son, etc., different kinds of cases like that. In this case, Beth Shammah and Beth Hillel, whether you're Chloku or whether Nechassim or Chaskasim. In this case, both Beth Shammah and Beth Hillel agree that you divide them, because neither the son's Yorshim nor the mother's Yorshim have a Chazakah on it. Therefore, it's a case where you have two people, you have two different, because of the suffix, and therefore it's Yachloiku. Right. Therefore, Yachloiku, like any case, with Shema v'Shema, both sides are claiming Shema, neither one has a current Chazak on it, and therefore Yachloiku.
That's what he says.
No, we haven't gotten to Rabbi Akiva.
Who's the Chazim, right? Are they? If
they were the mother. And they're the mothers.
Oh, isn't there a Chazak now? For the mother's family?
No, because they were her Nechassim, and they weren't her family.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Beth Shammah and Beth Hillel both agree that Yechloku. But Omer Rabbi Akiva, however, Rabbi Akiva says, Moidani Bazu Shanachasim Chaskasim. Actually, I admit in this case, which means that Rashi says, even though usually Beth Shammah in all the other cases said Yechloku, and in all the other cases, the Shammah said Yechloku. Here they're agreeing with Beth Hillel and saying Yechloku. Here, Rabbi Akiva says, here actually I agree with Beth Hillel's usual opinion in all the other cases, Shanachasim b'chaskasim, that the Nechassim remain in their Chazaka. Who is Chazaka then? Is the Muchzik then the mother's family or is it the son's family?
It goes
to one side, yes. That's the Gemara discusses over there, the details, Nichtet Zayn Barzel versus Nichtet Malug, whatever.
Beth Shammah usually says
that. Beth Shammah in all the rest of that Perek says Yechloku. Here, all of a sudden, Beth Shammah is still saying Yechloku, and Beth Hillel agrees with them. Comes Rabbi Akiva and says, actually, in this case, I agree with what Beth Hillel holds everywhere else, that Nechassim Chaskasim.
So who
Nechaskasim is, that the Gemara discusses over there, the difference between Nechassim, between Nechassim, Basel, and Nechassim, Lord. But anyway, so Rashi says that Rabbi Akiva is saying, I'm from Beth Shammah, but in this case, I agree with Beth Hillel's usual position. Tosfos says, no, Rabbi Akiva is not from Beth Shammah. Rabbi Akiva is usually from Beth Hillel. Just okay, the previous Mishnayos all say, the previous Mishnayos talk about this opinion and that, and here we have Eilu Ve'Eilu Moidiv, so Rabbi Akiva also says, I'm Moidiv, even though it's not really an appropriate Lashon. Okay, whatever, the point is that he says that Nechassim B'Chazkasim. So therefore, you see that there you leave it because you leave it in the Chazaka of whoever has it. So why over here all of a sudden, we don't take it away, this topic. Why over here are we saying that we take away a mana from him and give it to each of the five claimants?
Right.
So before we get to the answer, umimai did Rabbi Akiva. Fine. Now we have to ask the opposite question. I skipped a line over here. I skipped a couple of lines. Amalei. So he answers, Hasam Shema v'Shema. Yes, but in that case of the house collapsing, both sides are claiming Shema. Neither one actually knows who died first. Hacha Gazalach Mechamisha Bori v'Shema. Whereas the Gazalach Mechamisha, he's saying Shema. I don't know which one of you it was. Each of them is saying it was for sure me. So each of them is making a tainus bari, and he is counterclaiming with Shema. Fine, that would be different. Okay. The question is, v'amach nisin tacha, what about our Mishnah? Amal l'shnayim gazalti l'echad mekem mana, where he says he volunteers
Wait,
the two people.
I don't understand why we brought this from a bathroom Mishnah about Rabbi Akiva. How does that help?
Because he doesn't.
Because we see that. Because we see over there that he says you have a suffix, but nevertheless, we don't say, for example, that the Nechassim gets split equally among the Yosheb Aim and the Yosheb Ben or whatever. We see that even though both the Shammah and Beth Hillel agree that you do over here, he sticks to his guns and says Nechassim b'chaskasim. So therefore, by the same logic over here, if we didn't realize the difference between Bori v'Shema and Shema v'Shema, which we the Machshon didn't realize that, didn't consider that distinction, then we should say, fine, there's a suffix. Okay, you're not going to split it between all five, fine, because not all five are entitled to it, but you should do like Reb Tarfon did, Maniach Zela B'Nehem or Mestalik. What are you making him pay out a mona to each one individually?
The Rabbi Akiva doesn't make them?
That's what we're asking. That's what we're asking. The Rabbi Akiva seems to be contradicting himself. In the case of the Gazlan, he says he has to pay each of them individually. In the case of the house collapsing, we said, the Nechassim go b'chaskasim, whoever is the Muchzik. Well, but the Gazlan himself...
Splitting it would be like paying each one Individually.
Okay, so now, what about our Mishnah then? The Shem of a Shema, who our Mishnah, the case of an our Mishnah where he volunteered, is also a Shem of a Shema. He doesn't know which one it was, and they themselves also don't know that whether it was him or not. Because only knows in Lazemonev, Lazemonev. And yet the Mishnah says he has to pay out individually to each one. So how does that fit with the Chasson b'chas Chasson? The Gazlan has a Chazakah on these Monim. Why are we making him pay out individually on the basis of a Shema claim against him?
And so, here it's stronger because we know that 4 out of 5 must be wrong.
Okay, so before we get to the answer, we have to ask again, Majer Rabbi Akiva, fine, who says our Mishnah goes like Rabbi Akiva? The answer is, Dikatoni Allah Dahi, because the Mishnah, the Braita said over there in Yeromas, Murder of Tarkin, Ba'om Lashnaim Gazalti Lacham Mekemana, that he admits that if a person himself voluntarily says, I stole a mana from one of the two of you, Ve'eni Yadei Ezim Mekem Fuller, and I don't know which one of you it was, we say we make him pay out a mana to each one, and when we say Laman Murder, if the Tarkin is admitting, who would he be admitting to? Lav le Rabbi Akiva by Plugde. Obviously, he must be admitting to Rabbi Akiva, who argues with him in the case where they sued him. So therefore, obviously, Rabbi Akiva would agree. If Rabbi Tarfon even is murder, certainly Rabbi Akiva, who's more machmir in the other case, would agree. So therefore, you see that Rabbi Tarfon would say that you pay out each one individually. What about Nechas and the Chuskos? And what about why is that different than the case of the collapsed house? In both cases, it's Shem of a Shema, because in the case of the collapsed house, both sets of Yerushim are claiming Shema. Here, each of the claimants themselves are saying Shema.
You mean by the Gneva or by the...
By either one, by the Gneva and by the collapsed house. It's all Shem of a Shema. But over there he says, by the collapsed house, he says, Nechasim b'chaskasim, you go according to the Cheskas, you go according to whoever has the Chazaka on the money. Therefore, Nechsit and Barzo go to whoever, Nechsit and the Mulug go to whoever, whatever. But over here we're saying we ignore the Gazlan's Chazaka on his own money and we make him pay out individually to each one. What's the difference? So, okay, the question is, and we might a Shem of a Shema. Fine, who says, though, that our Mishnah is talking about Shem of a Shema? The answer is Chod of the Lekatani Tovina. You say we know that for two reasons. Number one, because the Mishnah did not say that they are suing him. Yeah, that our Mishnah is Shem of a Shema. We know that, first of all, because it doesn't say they're suing him. If they were suing him, it would mean each of them has a tiny body. You definitely stole from me. Like this, it's not. The Mishnah mentioned no such thing. Second of all, V'oid, Hotani Rabchia, Ze'emian in Yedeh, Ze'emian in Yedeh. Also, we have a braisa where Rabbi Chiya says explicitly that our Mishnah here in Bava Bai, in Bava Masiyah, that says I say to two people, Gazalti Mecha Mekem, Rabbi Chiya clearly states in a braisa that the case is each one of them is saying Eini Yedeya. That not only he says Eini Yedeya, but they themselves say, I don't know whether it was me or... The answer is, Ho'okim Nelabu Valot Tifidei Shemayim. We already established before on Amar Aleph that even Rabbi Akiva is only saying in a case of Shem of a Shema that you're only obligated Lot Tifidei Shemayim, not Mitzad Ikir Adi. Bari V'Shema is different, like Tosha said on Amar Aleph. But because it's Shem of a Shema, therefore we can't obligate him to pay out all of them. Therefore, ordinarily, yes, we would say Nechasim V'Chaskasan, he can keep his money. But if he wants to be Lot Tifidei Shemayim, yes. Whereas Rabbi Tarfon wouldn't make that distinction between Bari V'Shema or Shem of a Shema. Either way, he would say there's only one mana in question over here. You pay out that one mana and that's that. Fine. One more thing we have to ask. Umiyama Rava. Now let's go back to, we talked about yesterday, that Rava had made the distinction back in the case of Pikadon. He made a distinction between Kricha Achas or Shtei Krichas. If you had the first case of the Mishnah was the equivalent of one person giving him a pikadon, and now he's forgotten who it was. We make him pay out both of them. Whereas we said the case where two people gave him a pikadon, one gave him 100, one gave him 200. We said that Rava had said that's the equivalent of them giving it all as one big bundle, because he says you yourselves obviously trusted each other. Therefore, I didn't feel I have to be obligated to keep track, right? Did Rava really make that distinction? Called the Shtei Krichas Havalei L'Meida, that any time he was given something as two separate bundles, he is expected to be particular and to know to write on the bundles or whatever it is, whose is whose. Did Rava really say that? V'ha'amad Rava, v'itame Rapapa, but we find that Rava said, or some say Rapapa said, about a case as follows, a somewhat similar case involving animals. It's a case in Bechoris. Two people brought animals for Pekadin to a shepherd. One brought one animal, one brought two animals. Later on, each of them is claiming two animals. That's the equivalent of shtei krichas, because each of them brought...
Animals you cannot bring in exactly at the same time.
Well, wait. So, two people then did this.
Right.
So it's shtei krichas, because it's shtei krichas. It's the equivalent of two bundles right in front of one right in front of the other. And shemaniach roya b'neinu mistalek. And Rava says that in that case, all the shepherd has to do is he puts down the third animal between them and he leaves. Here, by the way, putting down the third animal between them does not necessarily have, some of the Mephoshim explain, doesn't necessarily mean like before putting it in escrow. It may well mean that actually you put it down and told the Alam Zayar. That whichever one has the stronger proof or the stronger ability to get it or whatever may be entitled to it. Some Mephoshim learn that way. But anyway, whatever it is, you don't make him pay out four animals. Why not? L'chodet shtei krichas. He should have kept track who gave him the two and who gave him the one animal. So Rashi points out, actually, the difference is like this. When it comes to money, fine, you're talking about two bundles of money. The guy can argue, you know what, okay, it's true, one was bigger, one was smaller. I didn't really pay attention. A bundle is a bundle, kind of. When it comes to animals, though, it's a very obvious thing, whether he's giving you two animals or one animal. Why aren't we holding him responsible? So he answers him, yes, but there we're talking about a case where they put it in the shepherd's flock without him even knowing about it. So therefore, so that's the thing. So therefore, we can't hold him responsible. He had no way of knowing then who gave the two and who gave the one. Yes, he wasn't there. Right. And Mephoshim,
we bring this case? It's so obvious.
It's not, but nevertheless.
Because
you still, afterwards, okay, so the question was like this, Tosfos explained.
Do you have to have Das?
No. Tosfos explained the point of the question was like this. When it came to bundles of money, we said there's a difference whether they're doing it in the presence of each other or not. If they're doing it in each other's presence, we assume they trusted each other. On the other hand, though, when it comes to animals, on the face of it, it shouldn't matter whether they did it at the same time or whether they did it one after the other, because animals are a very public thing. When the shepherd is going around with the animals, it'll be well known that he's watching animals for Pliny or he's watching animals for Pliny. There's no way to prevent, in other words, even if Reuben came with his two animals today and Shimon comes with his one animal tomorrow, there's no way to prevent Shimon from knowing that the shepherd has already taken care of Reuben's two animals. Therefore, the Gemara thought to say that there's no distinction. It doesn't matter when they brought it. And the answer is no, there is still a difference. If they bring it in each other's presence, then we do treat it like bundles of money. But if they do it with the shepherd's knowledge, regardless whether they did it one on one day and the other on the other day, or regardless whether they did it at the same time, the shepherd is going to be responsible to keep track. He cannot say, like, with bundles of money.
He doesn't have to be presently there physically.
If he's not present, that's the point. Then he's potter. Then he's potter from the third. Then he's potter.
He doesn't have das.
That's the point. Because he wasn't
das without being there.
That shalomi daita means he didn't know that they deposited them. In other words, the point is like this, Tosfos says. Okay. If he wasn't there or whatever, he has no das of it, then fine, we can't hold him responsible.
Right.
But if he was there, unlike with bundles of money, where Rava will make a distinction whether one brought it on Tuesday and one brought it on Wednesday versus when they brought it together, when it comes to animals, there's no such distinction. If they bring him animals at the same time or on alternate days, he's still responsible to keep track of who brought him two and who brought him one, and if not, then he is going to have to pay out the fortune.
As long as he knows that
they actually deposited it.
Right.
So there's a difference, that's the point. Tosfos says there's a difference between bundles of money where you can have one person brings his money, bundle of money on one day, and the next day when somebody comes, he doesn't know that the previous money has already been deposited, versus animals which are taken around the pasture, and therefore everybody knows that you're already taking care of Reuben's animals. The Mishnah said, "V'chein shnei kelim." The Mishnah continued. Besides, for the case of money, we have the case of the pekadin of 100 and a pekadin of 200. We also have the case of a pekadin of an expensive keli and a pekadin of a cheaper keli, where again each of them is claiming the expensive one. We said that according to the Tanakhama, same thing. You give the smaller one to one of them. You give out of the value of the large one. You give an amount equal to the smaller one to the other. Rashi had said it means you break the big keli. The Rashba said it means you sell it. And again, Rabbi Yossi disagreed and said that you can't do that.
In this case, also they both at the same time.
That's what it would have to be, because again, according to Rava, if they brought it on different days, if they brought it on separate days or whatever, then he would be responsible to pay out too. Yeah. The Gemara says it's tzricha. We need to be told a case that involves money as well as a case that involves kelim. Because if we only have the first case involving money, you would say bahi kami rabbanan. In that case, the rabbanan would say you give 100 to each of them and leave aside the third 100 actually yav eliyahu mishum delek of seder. Because fine, there's no actual loss involved. There's no irreversible loss. Eventually, once we figure out who the rama is and who's telling the truth, we'll give the third 100 to the one who deserves it, and that's that. Ava Bahava, when a case comes to a Kaili, the Ikab Seder de Gadra, where the large one is going to be ruined, again, according to Rashi, it's broken, it's an irreversible thing, or according to the Rashba and everybody else, that you sold it, fine, but it's sold, it's gone, you're not getting it back, so there's a loss of that. Ema Modulei le Rabbi Yossi, maybe they would agree with Rabbi Yossi that you have to keep everything in escrow, Adshiyav Elio, to avoid that Seder, so therefore you need the case of the Kaili. The Iyitma Baha, and on the other hand, if we only have the case of the Kalim, you would say maybe Baha Kama Rabbi Yossi, fine. Maybe Rabbi Yossi only says in the case of the Kalim that the whole thing, because you don't want an irreversible damage over there. Al Baha, when it comes to the money, where you can easily make it up afterwards, Ema Modululu Rabbanan, maybe you would agree with Rabbanan, Tzricha, therefore we need both cases. Okay. The problem with that is, the Gemara says, Baha Taima de Rabbi Yossi Mishram Hesed Haramai. Fine. But we said before, that Rabbi Yossi's reason why he's saying you don't do this, why you keep the whole thing in escrow, nothing to do with the hefsed of the keli or not. It's because imkein ma hefsed haramai. He says, then what's the ramai losing out? He's going to get his 100 or he's going to get his small keli or whatever, and that's it. There's no incentive for him to tell the truth. So why would we think that Rabbi Yossi would say any different in the case of an irreversible? Implying that in other words, he disagrees in both cases. We know that. But why would we think that he would be murdered to the Chachamim in the case of money? In the case of money, you still have a problem that the Ramai is not losing anything. Yeah. Bishram Hefsed Ramai. Ella, no. Tavayel Rabbanon. No, we actually need both cases to explain the Rabbanon's reasoning. The loizu afzu, in other words, because again, if it only said it by money, we would only know they hold it by money. When it comes to Kalim, we would think they were moida. Therefore, it has to say the case of Kalim also. Why didn't it just say Kalim? The loizu afzu katani, because the common thing the Mishnah does sometimes, it tells us a case that's less of a chiddush and then a case that's a greater chiddush. So first it tells us money, where it's less of a chiddush, and then it tells us even in the case of a keli, where according to the Rabbanan, you're going to have to break or sell the larger keli to pay out the value of the smaller one to the other claimant. Nevertheless, we still do that. We're not worried about the hefsid.
No, the rabbi will not be
losing. Because the Rabbanan are not concerned about the Ramai losing.
If you had just the case of the keli, you would be able to infer it.
Fine. But that's loizu afzu katani. It's a common thing that a Mishnah will tell us a case that's a lesser chiddush and then a case that's a greater chiddush.
If you can infer.
Because sometimes it will do that. Sometimes the Mishnah will tell us the more obvious case, and then by the way, here's a fairly obvious. The Gemara does that sometimes also. We've seen many times in the Gemara. The Gemara will start out pshita. It's obvious that such and such. Now, what about this case? The Mishnah does a similar kind of thing. Mishnah says hamaskid peiros to chaver. If somebody deposits produce for safekeeping by another person, so now later on, even if that produce is getting destroyed, for example, Rashi says by mice or by rotting or whatever, lo yigabah, and he should not touch them as far as selling them. You still continue to hold on to them. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, I'm a mochin, but Beis Din, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says, no, what you do them is you sell them under the supervision of Beis Din, because it's like returning a lost object to the owner, because otherwise it's going to completely get eaten up or rotted or whatever. So, okay. Gemara says, my timer. Why should we say, according to the Chachamim, that you don't touch it no matter what? Amr of Kahana, Adam Reutze, Bekav Shalom, Etisha Kav Meshachaber, a famous expression, a person would rather have a calf of his own produce, which, as Rashi says, he worked hard on it, rather than even 9 kavim of somebody else's. A famous expression.
Is it against a rot?
Yeah, that's the word, yeah. All that will be left at the end. We'll have a kav left at the end. We'll have a kav left at the end.
Nine is gone.
We'll see soon in the Gemara whether that's meant literally. Wait. Okay. It's an expression. And by the way, it talks about chassidus, the idea that in the same vein, our avoda is much more precious than what's given to us milamayla. Kav shaloi, it's what you worked on. Tosfos Yomtiv, by the way, has an interesting expression. The Gemara is going to say in a little bit that nine kavim is not necessarily meant literally. It may be an exaggeration, but it's a guzma. However, so then Taka, why do we use the expression nine kavim? He says because we find in various places in the Gemara the minimum size that can be considered a field is a place is an area where you can plant nine kavim. So therefore, nine kavim is like whatever it is. An area of a base kavim is about 10 by 10 amas, about 15 by 15 feet. So nine of those. It's a small area, but it's what can be considered a field in halacha. We'll learn about it in Bava Basra in due time, says the Shem. So therefore, the symbolism is a person would rather have even only one calf left of his own rather than the whole produce of somebody else's field. Yeah.
We saw that by the two animals have collapsed, a chaver has to save them. Why can't we say the same thing here?
Oh, because we're saying over here, so Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying it's on Meshav Aveda. But the point is, we're saying in the case of an animal that's collapsing, sure, you have a mitzvah to help save the other guy's property, fine.
Yeah.
But in this case, you're a shomer. Your job is not to be a Meshav Aveda. You were not told to touch it. The person himself. At Abedaba, in fact, one of the Mepharshim points out, if the person himself didn't care about his produce, he himself, when he's going on a trip, he would have sold it himself and set aside the money, which isn't going to spoil so fast. The fact that he was mafgid peiros by you implies he wants his own peiros. Therefore, you have no authority to go and sell them. Oh, wait, we'll see soon.
Even if they get destroyed.
We'll see soon. Relax. Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar, there's a different reason. Chayshin and Shema saw an amaskid trumo maitza amokamachet. Because we have to be concerned that maybe the maskid may have designated these peiros as trumo maitza on other produce of his.
Yes.
Now, that's not so simple, by the way, because Tosfos points out a little bit that really truma and maitza have to be given from produce that's together. You're not really supposed to take produce in one place and declare it truma on behalf of produce in another place. Tosfos gives a couple of explanations that one of them is we may be talking about what if he has to do it right before Shabbos, for example. He doesn't have time to do it properly, but he has to make sure there's Shasat Chak, yeah.
Or he's on a ship.
He's on a ship, yeah. Well, no, it's because they're actually the produce, all the produce was together at home. You're talking about the case of Ram Gamliel. Fine, but he said that the maaser that I'm going to be setting aside, the maaser that I'm mentally designating here, is at home, and that's given to Rabbi Yeshua, and the other maaser is given to Rabbi Akiva, etc. He didn't actually have grain or whatever it is with him on the ship, but he's designating
as Kenyan.
Yeah, he made a Kenyan chotzer. That's what we talked about earlier in the Pesach. There are Mepharshim who say it's not that he may in the future declare them Truma Meiser, it's he may have already declared them Truma Meiser before he ever deposited them. In which case that neatly avoids Tosfos' problem. Okay. So therefore, Truma Meiser, you can't go sell it because people are gonna be eating it. Yeah. Okay. Meiser, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Hamaskin Peiros et Sachaber, if you deposit Peiros for safekeeping by somebody else, the Shomer is not allowed to touch them. Lefichach, and therefore, Balabais, Oisois and Truma Maisa Amakamacha. Therefore, because you're not allowed to sell them, because of Rabbashas, because Roy sold them a Kapshaloi, therefore the Balabas knows they're not going to be sold, therefore he can give them a Truma, therefore he can designate them as Truma and Maisa. So, Bishleim, Rav Kahana, points Rav Kahana, the Braisa flows very nicely. Hainut Katani Lefichach. You shouldn't sell them because of an external reason. Roy saw them a capsuloi. Therefore, because the owner knows you're not going to be selling it, therefore he will be entitled to declare it truma maisa without concern that you're going to end up selling it and causing people to eat truma.
How is he going to do it? Because on the ship, then he has to own the land that's on.
No, you can designate the Truma and Maiser. There, Rav Gamliel was actually being machneh to the respective people. That's different. He had to be machneh. Tosfos learned over there because it was Shas Abir. It's the time when you have to get rid of all the Truma or the outstanding Truma and Maiser that's in your house. Yeah. But here we're not talking to be machneh. He was talking about the designate. So according to Rav Kahana, yeah, it works. The logic is backwards. Because he might designate it as Truma and Maiser, therefore you can't sell it. What are you saying? You can't sell it, therefore you can designate it Truma and Maiser. So
I kind of believe that.
Because that roots out in Makab Shaloi. The answer is Hacha Kamar. No, that's what the Braisa means is like this, according to Rav Nachman Yitzchak. Hashta de Amar Rabbanan Loi Nezabin, now that the Chachamim have told you you're not allowed to sell it, de Chai Shinan, because there is this slight concern that he may have made it Truma, therefore, once we apply that concern and say, therefore, even though it's only a slight chance, don't take the chance, don't sell it, Therefore, the Balabas is in fact entitled to act on that Chayshinon and actually designate it as Truma and Maiser. So in other words, a coincidence of Kahana, it's a two-step thing. Don't sell it because Roitzel and Kapshaloi, therefore he can make it Truma and Maiser. A coincidence of Nachmanitzel is sort of a three-step thing. He may make it Truma and Maiser, therefore you shouldn't sell it. Therefore, since you're not selling it, he's definitely allowed to make it Truma and Maiser. But the Lefikach, therefore, works according to him also. Amar Rav Babachana Amar Bechnan, Machloikus B'Kedei Chesroinan. The whole Machloikus between in the Mishnah, between the Chachamim and Rav Shimon Gamliel, is only if they're getting destroyed B'Kedei Chesroinan, within the normal amounts that they get destroyed. Later on, in a couple of blocks on Daf Mem, we're going to learn a Mishnah that talks about for different kinds of produce, what's the usual amount that you can expect them to lose out of their quantity over a year's time. Between mice and rats eating from it.
It's more than that.
That's what we're saying, yeah. So it gives different figures for each kind of produce. So if it's the Kedei Chesroinan, and if it's within the normal amount of expected spoilage and eating up by mice or whatever, we'll see for different kinds of produce, it's different amounts, then that's the Machlokes. But if it's getting lost at a rate greater than that, Divra Hakol Mochen Rebeistin, then everybody would agree that you sell it in Beistin, because at that point it's going to be completely lost. Tosfos asks that, then what's the actual machloikas? I mean, if it's less than the expected amount, Rav Shimon Gamliel has no reason to say you should sell it. If it's more, then the Chachamim are agreeing you sell it. So what are they arguing? What are they arguing about? If it's the exact amount, literally? Yeah. So therefore, Tosfos says no, like this. Let's say, for example, you have a certain kind of produce, you expect, let's say, that 10% of it is going to be lost over the course, let's say 12%, in order to keep the numbers even. 12%, let's say, is going to be lost over the course of a year. Fine, that means, on average, 1% per month. Let's say, for example, you check it after a month or 2 months, you find, let's say, that 3 or 4% is gone. It's not a whole year yet, but if you prorate it over the course of the year, it's going to be a lot more.
Right.
Therefore, that's what we're saying. It's anticipation. Therefore, right. So that's the point. In other words, suppose the Chachamim would say, okay, it's more than the expected rate for these couple of months. However, the year hasn't passed yet. You don't know. The rate may slow down later on in the year. Don't sell it yet. Whereas Rav Shimon Gamliel would
say exponential rate.
No, because we're not just talking about rotting. We're not just talking about rotting. We're also talking about mice and whatever. Yeah. Okay. So maybe it's not a strict linear thing. Maybe whatever you do. I don't know. You do an algebraic analysis of it or whatever. I don't know. You know. But whatever it is, the point is that Shimon Gamliel would say that once you have reason to think that over the year it's going to be more than expected, go and sell it already now. Whereas the Chachamim would say, no, wait until it actually see that it's
destroyed.
Not until it's all destroyed. Until you see that at the end of the year, it's actually been more than the expected amount. At that point, sell what's left. It won't be. Come on. It's not going to all spoil like that. Okay. By the way, there is something that comes out of this as far as practical halacha. In Shulchan Aruch, it talks about, you know, if you have, for example, you deposited chometz with somebody for safekeeping before Pesach, that shomer, fine, has a responsibility. When it comes right before the time of burning chometz, he has a responsibility to try to sell it. Mitzad HaShavas HaVeda. What happens if he didn't? What happens if he didn't sell it? So the Magen Avraham wants to say that in that case, you make him chayiv. He failed in his duty as a shomer. On the other hand, many other poskim, including the Alter Rebbe, argue on that. The Alter Rebbe says no, because, fine, because once you're telling him to sell it, he's not a shomer anymore. At that point, you're talking about whether he has a mishnah. Yeah. At that point, you're talking about a Shabbos Aveda. Fine, if he failed to do a Shabbos Aveda, fine, he failed to do the mitzvah. You can't hold him liable for it in a financial sense. And therefore, he should sell it, but if he didn't, he will in fact be punished.
What financially would he be liable for if he didn't?
According to the Magen Avraham, he'd be responsible, like a shomer who didn't take care of the thing that he's supposed to take care of.
Oh, so he'd have to buy him new
chametz at the Pesach.
Whereas according to the $100 bottle of something.
Whatever it is. Whereas according to the Alter Rebbe, no, because once you're telling him to sell it already, he's no longer a shomer. At that point, you're telling him to do a Shabbos Aveda. Fine, but a Shabbos Aveda, you can't penalize somebody for failing to do a Shabbos Aveda. The Alter Rebbe mentions an interesting thing over there that one of the Achronim wants to make a distinction that maybe once you're talking about it being an Aveda, a Shomer Aveda is a Shomer Sacher. Therefore, maybe he should be liable. And the Alter Rebbe slugs that up also and says that no, if he was a Shomer Chinam originally, then fine, he's a Shomer Chinam. If he's a Shomer, yeah.
He's not a Shomer Sacher.
Because here we don't consider him a Shomer Aveda because, again, he's not a Shomer anymore at this point. His job is to sell it. At this point, he's not a Shomer at all anymore. Yeah. Okay. So, this that Rabbi Baba Chana said, the distinction between Yosef Mekadechas Ronan or Mekadechas Ronan, Adir of Nachma, it's Vade Pluza. Okay, there's no question, obviously, what he's saying must necessarily disagree with Rav Nachma Yitzchak. Because if Nachma Yitzchak is saying that the problem is he may have made it Truma Meiser, it doesn't matter how much it's getting spoiled. The fact is, you don't want to sell off Truma where Zorim will eat it. Adrab Kahana Milema Pliga. Do we necessarily, though, have to say that Rabbi Baba Chana is also disagreeing with Rav Kahana, his Roitza Adam Makab Shaloi, etc.? The answer is no. Because even Rav Kahana maybe is only talking about if it's spoiling within the expected rate. Maybe Rav Kahana would agree with Rabbi Baba Chana that if it's spoiling at more than the expected rate, then you're ready, you should sell it. Okay, what about Roitza Makab Shaloi Matisha Kavan Chachavera Kama? But didn't he say 1 to 9? That's more than any Kadechas Renan. The answer is Guzma Balma. He's exaggerating his expression. He means a person would rather have his own than somebody else's. It doesn't mean that if it was spoiling, he doesn't mean if 90% of it is spoiled, he'd still want you to leave.
So they're still arguing in between.
That's the thing. So we're saying, according to the Rav Baba Chana, we're saying, is it spoiling at the expected rate or not? So Rav Kahana may well agree with that if it's spoiling more than the expected rate, fine, never mind, you're outside of a capsule. At that point, the person, more than the expected rate, we just say. Whatever kind of produce it is, each one has an appropriate rate. We will learn about that in a couple of days. That's a shame. Okay. Maybe. Fine. I have another contradiction, though, to this whole business about Truma. A Braisa says, L'fichach, Balabais, Oysos, and Truma, Al-Maita, Mokamacha, the same Braisa that recorded before, that the Balabas is able to designate it as Truma and Meister. If you're going to tell me that if it's Yosef, the Kadechas Roinon, you're allowed to sell it, fine. Rabbi Baba Chana is entitled to disagree with Rav Yitzchak. He can't argue with a Braisa, though. If a Braisa says that the owner is able to make it from now on Truma and Meister on Makamacher, then what's going to happen if it's spoiled greater than if it's spoiled more than expected? What are you going to do then? Why is the owner allowed to designate it as Truma and Meister? What if it spoils more than the expected rate? And the shomer is going to sell it, not knowing the owner made it truma meiser. And people are going to end up, and the owner is going to end up eating kevel because let's say it was sold before he ever designated a truma and meiser. The answer is yosef mekdechas ronan lo shchiach. It's not common for it to spoil more than the expected rate. Therefore, we don't have to worry about it. So we'll continue. I wonder would anybody be willing to come back for a little bit after Ma'ariv, and we'll try to catch up because we really are far behind and we need to catch up sometime. So maybe another, even just another 10-15 minutes will put us in a better shape. Okay.